Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest this morning is Jenny Ray. She is a Native American medicine woman and a descendant of the medicine ways of Inya Oyate, the Stone Nation. Jenny and I will be discussing the history of stone medicine, its connection to our Ina Maka, Mother Earth, and the reconnection of today's wellness practitioners to this ancient art of healing. Good morning, Jenny. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Johnny. It's great to be with you.
Thank you for joining me this morning. I know it's real early in Washington State, but I'm really excited having you on the radio show to talk a little bit about a little history and about stone medicine.
Yeah, well, you will forgive me if I stumble because I'm about a quart low on my coffee so far.
That will be fine. We're having this wonderful conversation as a kitchen table kind of setup, so you don't have to worry. It's very casual and having a good time talking about things that affects all of us. So let us get started by having you tell us a little bit about yourself. Can you please give us a little history lesson about the Stone Nation and your life's journey growing up with your family?
I am really lucky. I have two families. I have a white family and I have a native family. So I got to have a little bit of experience of both worlds as I was growing up. In my white family, we were all a bunch of rock hounds. Every weekend, we'd have our picks and shovels and buckets, and off we'd go to gather different stones. And some of them were into hobby mining with little gold pans. And they actually had claims for chrome mine and asbestos mine and garnet mine up in Idaho. And then on the Indian side of the family, I would learn a little bit more about the stones as individuals, you know, more about the energy that each stone carried and the relationship that we have with it. So I got to see the Stone Nation from two different worlds all the time I was growing up. So I was really lucky in that.
Now, I understand that you did some gold panning in Oregon.
Yeah, it was nothing to holler about. You know, I could have all of the nuggets clustered together and they still wouldn't be as big as my little fingernail. So nothing to take to the bank, but it was really a good experience because it got us kids out on the river and, you know, in nature and understanding a little bit of the geology and how things were made up because my grandfather on my mom's side, on my white side of my family, was an amateur geologist. So we learned some of the technical names for things, and he would explain to us how the gold would cluster together because it was heavier and it would stay at the bottoms, and you had to move the stone and get down to it in order to have some of the black sand that you could find in the weight of the bottom of the pan. And so it was a really good education. And then when I would be with my dad's family, then we would pick up different stones, and he would talk about this as the legend keeper. All the stones are the historians, and he'd show us a fossil and you'd be on top of a mountain, and here'd be this fossil of a little shell. So we understood that the history that was being saved by the stones was explaining to us that that used to be the bottom of the ocean. So it was two different perspectives all the time we were growing up with how the geology was forming things and how the explosion of the volcano had left this obsidian over here and the lava stone there. Mm-hmm. And then the next time we'd talk to my father, he'd say, yeah, but that lava stone still has fire in it. And we'd take it into the sweat lodge and have the heat from it. So it was amazing to have those two perspectives all the time.
How many siblings you guys have when you were growing up? How many brothers and sisters did you have when you were growing up?
There were six of us, and I'm the oldest, so of course I'm the one that had to wipe the baby's noses and find the diapers and tote them up the hill, and I never let them forget it.
Being the oldest, is there some sort of rites of passage, so to speak, that you have to go through from the cultural standpoint of view?
Yeah, I think there is an expectation from each of our families that the eldest will pick up the traditions of the family and will be the one that carries forward the legends and carries the medicine in a way that can be passed on. But it's not a requirement. You know, there's always a hope and there's always an encouragement for that. But it's not a requirement. So if I decided I wanted to go off and become a barber, that would have been just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not a bartender, but I could have been a barber.
Right.
But the understanding with the family is that they made the offering to everyone. You know, everyone was given the same information. And those who were attracted to it, who had some kind of a resonance with it, would pick it up and walk on. And those who weren't condemned or in any way thought less than because they didn't take on the medicine ways.
But it is within the lineage, though. I mean, it's passed down from generation to generation. Someone has to pick it up, so to speak?
Correct.
Very interesting.
And it's kind of disturbing for me that in the native tradition, so many things have gotten set aside, and it seems that Iyapajuta, the stone medicine, was a little heavy to carry in non-native world, and in order to participate in modern society, most people laid it aside, and I am the last living elder who is carrying it that still has bloodline. So when I'm gone, none of my children plan to carry it forward, but I have children who are my students that are not of our blood. So the medicine will be continuing, but no longer will it be in the bloodlines of my family. That's a little disappointing. But of course, it's none of my business. The stones know what they're doing.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the freedom that I guess that we allow our families to decide in some ways. And that is not necessarily just, I think, in stone medicine itself. I think, especially with my Chinese heritage, when we talk about wood carving, this is back in Asia, that is, I realized that those wonderful, true trait, the skills that people have, are not able to be passed down because the family member chose to do something else. Whether it's good or bad, I mean, I'm not here to judge at all. I mean, I can certainly understand that. But the good news is, as you had mentioned, you have external families to carry it forward.
Yeah. Now with our world being so connected and we all know everyone everywhere, it's been amazing to see, you know, some of the women in Japan that are carrying the stone medicine, just they make me weep because they carry it the way native people would.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so natural for them. They automatically pick it up. And they laugh at me and say, yeah, well, you're great with chopsticks. So, you know, it ends up that we are trading cultures around the world. And in a way that, you know, I'm just blessed to be here at this time to be able to witness that, to see it happening.
Well, in a way, too, you want to have someone that wants to carry forward this wonderful thing that you have to offer with a genuine sense of appreciation for what its true value is. And adding their own personal spiritual enthusiasm further enhance it, because that's what it's supposed to be, not passing it from generation to generation and going through a dilution versus it's supposed to be going through a process of enhancement.
Exactly.
And I think that's what you were telling me.
Exactly. When I see all of the, you know, additional cultural flavor added to this medicine, it does nothing but enhance it. And in some ways, that's something that's been very difficult for some of the elders, because it's like you watch the traditions. Just as an example, the sweat lodge has been picked up by many different people in all over the world. Mm-hmm. And occasionally it ends up being more like a sauna than an actual Inipi ceremony. And in Inipi, we are trying to carry a place of prayer and create a place to be reborn into the world again. So it's been really hard to watch that sometimes receive bad press because it's not been done appropriately and there is a lot to be considered with it. And yet at the same time, when I see other individuals that have picked it up with a true intention of heart and they walk it in a spiritual manner, some of the things that they accomplish through Sweat Lodge is incredible. It really is. It's beautiful.
That's wonderful news. Well, what is stone medicine?
Well, you know, it's been around forever. We have a saying, we always say something is 10,000 years old, because that seems like that's the oldest number we know.
Mm-hmm.
So we're always saying stone medicine's been here for 10,000 years. And some of the first people that actually performed stone medicine on non-native people, when we're willing to work on white people, were the folks in Hawaii. And they began that. Lomi Lomi is a form of massage that's like a dance. It's beautiful. It's like their arms are massaging the whole body with the elbow and the forearm and the hand, and many of the motions look like they're hula dance, and they incorporate warm stones with that. And here in America, on the mainland, the Cherokee, Ogallala, Assiniboine, and Santé, many different tribes had different forms of using heated and chilled stones on the bodies for wellness. The Mayan people, Inca, Aztec, Peruvian people, a lot of times had carved stones, little fetishes like little turtles or bears or snakes, and they would take those stones and lay them on different areas of the body and do prayers and ceremonies. The pie stone was used, the one that looks like a little donut that has a hole in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
Little pie stone, sometimes with crystal wands, is used in the Munikai ceremonies. Reflexology was practiced by the Aztec and discovered by a German woman and named reflexology. But the Aztec people would take heated stones and place them on specific points on the hands, face, and feet to bring peace and to bring harmony for the spirit and also relieve pain. In the Aboriginal tribes, this is really great. I got to go to Australia last year.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I've been there a couple times now to teach stone medicine and have been able to meet with some of the elders of the Aboriginal tribes. And they've shown me how they use their stones. Some of them are carved, and some of them are done with placement. They lay them in different places on the body to accomplish different kind of balance. Japanese, Chinese, and other Asian practitioners around the world had ways they could lay the stones out in a layout and have people walk on them or lay down on them. And that would help also, I think, with the meridian points and the reflexology points, acupressure points. It was doing that kind of thing scientifically, but emotionally and spiritually, they were reaching a better place of balance because the symbols that were being laid out had specific meaning for them. So all over the world, every civilization at one time or another has used the stones with the intention of healing. And, you know, we think it's all ancient, but when you think about it, there's guys right now selling amazing magnet stuff, and those are stones. You know, it's usually hematite that's been magnetized, or the copper bracelets that people wear for arthritis. You know, even the cobalt that's our main treatment for cancer, for chemotherapy cancer, cobalt is actually a stone. And so it's like all of this stuff. We're still in the Stone Age, you know. We're all working together to try and get well.
Right. Ultimately, we all, you know, this is the layman's approach to it. We all chemically made up, and stones obviously have chemical properties. What I mean by that is when we talk about energies, of course, it's electrons, protons, and everything else. And you mentioned something about energy meridians in our human body. And one of the things that I realized that you guys do is that y'all arrange those stones in different patterns.
Exactly.
Can you elaborate a little bit more about that in terms of certain patterns, if you can at least just give us an example, because you may have a rose pattern that you lay it out on person and what that's supposed to do.
Exactly. Well, there's a couple of different things. Now, a lot of times when we're using the heated and chilled stones, we're using them actually in a massage. So we press into the muscle with the heated stone to soften the tissue, and vasodilation takes place, so the blood is released and flows out easily through the body. Then we bring in a cold stone and create vasoconstriction, which closes them down and pushes out the blood that was there, so it's no longer stagnant, and that helps to detoxify the body. And then you leave the stone in that position where you finish the stroke, and you continue doing that until all of a sudden all of the stones are laid out. Maybe you've created a pattern that looks like a medicine wheel over the abdomen area. So now you have a complete circle of stones with a cross of stones in the center of it. Our belief is we've done the physical work, we've done what it took to heal the physical body, and created a symbol that recognizes the spiritual connection between us and Creator. Because by seeing the four directions of the medicine wheel and the circle on the outside of it showing that we are connected, it's bringing us into a oneness of communication on a physical, mental, spiritual, emotional level.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when we finish the treatment, we'll take the stones away from the body. You have to take the stones off so the client can get up, obviously, So what to do with them? You know, you don't want to just drop them in a pile and be disrespectful because they were great healing tools in our hands. So now we take them and lay them on the floor on a blanket or a towel or something, and it creates a symbol automatically because when you lay the stones down, they're going to have some kind of a shape. So when the client sets up and you both look at it, sometimes there's a message in it. Sometimes it'll look like an animal, you know, how we make pictures in the clouds.
Right.
Same thing. You look at the shapes of the stones and how they're laying together and which ones are touching each other. And maybe you'll receive a message that's on a deeper level, a more spiritual level than what you would have had if you just saw them laying in a bucket someplace. So it's a really magic time. It's a really beautiful time.
Are these stones recycled, cleansed, so to speak? And I guess in this case, we're not talking about just from a hygienic standpoint of view or spiritually cleansed.
Right. Well, a couple of things happen. Like you say, we do the sanitation thing, and we can talk about that later.
Right.
But on an emotional level and a spiritual level, each one of these stones is an individual. Each one is unique. Some of mine I've had for so long that they even have names. I even know them by name. And when you take that stone off of one person and it has spent a lot of time detoxifying them and taking out what they don't need,
that
stone needs to go back and lay on the ground. That way it can release into the earth all of that stuff. And it's so amazing. You know, Mother Earth is so incredible. She feeds off of our garbage. She likes what we're done with. So when we bring back to her all of the things that person's finished with, their detoxification gets fed back into Mother Earth, and it's food for her. So she can purify and cleanse the stone, re-energize it. And on a scientific level, we've even found out that when you lay the stone back on the ground, it realigns itself magnetically, that the electrons that are inside, the little atoms that are inside the stones, will realign and rebalance and re-energize. If we don't do that, if I don't take the stones out and give them a chance to cleanse themselves on the land, and I just keep washing it and sanitizing it, putting it back and reheating it for the next client, eventually they get where they won't hold the heat. It's like the heat can't penetrate deep enough into the stone, and all of a sudden they're like little dead stones. And how can that be? Well, it's because they didn't get a chance for their electricity. Everything's got electricity. It didn't get a chance for itself to be remagnetized and realigned electrically with the earth. So it no longer has that 7.5 megahertz vibration. Instead, it's lost its vibration. So there's no way for it to collect and hold the heat. So they make us take care of them. They make us re-energize them and cleanse them spiritually and physically. Cool.
It's very interesting what you just said, because what I'm hearing is there's a energy transference. The negative energy from a layman perspective goes into the stone based on the way you manipulate the stones, obviously, on the person's body. And then from there, you're taking that energy and transferring it back to Mother Earth.
Correct.
And it's a whole process of, in some ways, we're all living in a closed system here, regenerating and transferring energies from one to the other, and it's a process of recycle and renewing oneself.
Exactly. I think that's one of those beautiful little benefits that we hadn't even thought about when this first started going around the world. The same way as we're doing that to feed Mother Earth and regenerate for the next client happens when I go someplace and work on someone. Like, I had this great experience. I went to the Mandarin Oriental Hotel Spa in Washington, D.C. and trained their staff in stone medicine. Turns out the people that they work on are the senators and the congressmen, visiting dignitaries, presidents from other countries. So we are taking Mother Earth and putting it on the people who will make the decisions about our environment.
You may have to take a truckload, though, on that one.
Oh, my gosh, it's amazing. Yeah, it's like, okay, how many stones can we bring to Washington?
There you go. You may have to bring a boulder.
Yeah. It's incredible. So it is. It's reconnecting people to Mother Earth and then allowing the person's energy to reconnect to her so that she can help us to stay in the cycle we're supposed to be in. Pretty cool stuff, huh?
Very interesting. Very, very interesting to me, because there's a very fine line where we don't understand that we're all interconnected. And when I say that, because a lot of times when we talk about people say, oh yeah, we're all human beings, we're interconnected. Well, yes, and then if you think above and beyond that, we're talking about energies.
Exactly.
And when you talk about energies, then you're connected to everything.
Absolutely.
And that's the most beautiful part about it, because then you realize that, you know, you're just a different form of energy as compared to a stone or a piece of wood or something else.
Right.
And so that's the very difference in what I look at. How did you get to become a medicine woman? I know that it's sort of a rite of passage. You are carrying your family tradition forward, but how did you realize that this is something that's you?
Well, it's kind of interesting because I didn't really want to do this. I was kind of stubborn,
mm-hmm.
rebellious, as my father would say.
Mm-hmm.
But he just kept making people available to me. He introduced me to a man named Taz Connor, who was the great-grandnephew of Chief Joseph from the Nez Perce tribe, to one of the women named Bird Woman, who is an elder from our tribe. And these people could speak to me in a different way. I had a real hard time listening to a parent try to convince me that I needed to continue this and to learn
mm-hmm.
how to lead ceremony. You know, I was content to go to Sweat Lodge and sit in the back corner and have all the prayers benefit me. I really didn't want to lead anything.
Right.
So for years and years and years, it was more about the connections and the experience of the people that I was around. And eventually, through just circumstances, they began to die off as I got older, and suddenly there was no one else to do some of this. So I started teaching, and once you begin to teach others, then you're recognized and acknowledged as carrying the medicine. And when you carry the medicine, you are sometimes called medicine woman or medicine man. We don't have a graduation certificate. We don't go for so many years of training and then someday somebody says, you are medicine woman. You know, it doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's slow evolution. And once you have picked up the work and are carrying it forward in a way where many people begin to call you medicine woman or introduce you that way, then that's when you have to acknowledge within yourself that, yes, I am able to walk beside the medicine like this. And that gives you the term, then, medicine woman. Then if a person decides that they want to continue on and become a shaman, there's a little bit more intensive training. And in our traditions, there's 12 paths to the shaman. And each path represents a year, so that's 12 years of study.
Mm-hmm.
So a medicine man or a medicine woman would find people who are expert in different areas for these 12 years and work with them. So the first 4 years on the medicine wheel is about the directions. You know, each direction has an energy. Like, just for example, we'll take east. East is where the sun comes up in the morning, so our color on the medicine wheel is yellow for that gold that comes
mm-hmm.
in the morning. We see the eagle is living in east because the breath of life, when you first wake up in the morning, the first thing you do is take a deep breath. So breath and air comes from the east. So the element that lives there would be air. And eagle's wings are carrying our prayers to Creator. So eagle lives in the east. So we see all of that. And then there's many, many, many layers of that that you study. So for 1 year, you study about east and what it is that you could learn by paying attention to the things that come to you from east. So we do that for 4 years for the four directions.
That's a very long time. Wow.
Yeah. It's very deep. There is so much to it. It just goes on and on and on. You know, each direction represents a culture. So your
mm-hmm.
people, all of the Asian people, are from the east in our way on the medicine wheel. The red people, my people, are from the south on the medicine
mm-hmm.
wheel, because that's the color. So then for the next 4 years, we'll have the animal world, and we have a year of the flying ones, and a year for the four-legged, a year for the swimming ones, and a year for the creepy crawly. You know, all the little bugs and the worms and the snakes and all that. So you have a year of studying each one of those. And then in the final 4 years, you study Mother Earth, the Stone Nation, the
mm-hmm.
Star Nation, and the Unseen, which is the spirit world. So that 12 years, it's not exactly 12 years. I mean, it's not like you can find a teacher and go sit down there and study with them for a year and this is what you get. It took me a couple of years to find somebody that was well-versed, like in the Star Nation.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't live close to each other, so it took another 2 years to be able to get together often enough and to write back and forth before email. And, you know, I'm walking my 60th year, so a lot of my study has been done long before computers. So it took more than 12 years, but that's basically how we describe the 12 paths of shamanism. And so when you have worked through all of that, there is a final ceremony where you must present, and this is just in our tradition, we must present a gift of reindeer to a shaman we respect. And that sounds like a kind of funny thing, you know, it's like, oh my God, how am I going to give a reindeer to somebody, and how am I even going to meet another shaman? But Creator walks things for us. You know, I was introduced to a man named Phil Morgan, who I still work with. He's a really great shaman who was trained in a modern way through the Shamanic Institute with Michael Harner and Sandra Ingram. And about probably a year before I really had decided that I was prepared and ready to take on the mantle of shaman, I had been given a gift of this beautiful leather pouch from a woman from Alaska, and she told me it was made of reindeer. So it's like, oh my gosh, I've got this reindeer, and I've got this shaman. I need to think about this. And it took me some time to finally realize that Creator had manipulated the circumstances of my life to give me an opportunity, if I wanted to pick it up, to where I could make that gifting and go through that final ceremony and then be recognized in our tradition as shaman. So I did that about 10 years ago, and it's pretty amazing how all that stuff comes together.
What's just interesting is that it's a journey that you took, and everything is in layers, and you don't necessarily need to know what's around the corner. Mm-hmm. All you need to do is actually pay attention to the present moment.
Yeah, that's it.
When you finish this, then the next one will present itself, the next one, and the next one. The first thing when you mentioned about reindeer, like, I'm thinking about, like, okay, are we talking about the real-life reindeer here that I have to go out and...
Well, that's about what I thought, too.
That's right, yeah. And then you realize that, no, it's something that's, of course, symbolic and associated with reindeer, and,
right,
of course, from a spiritual standpoint of view. So everything makes sense, what you just said.
And it all works so smoothly as long as we don't get in the way. You know, if we just be quiet and sit by and watch and let it unfold, life is really pretty simple. It's when we get in there with a stick and try to stir it up that it makes a mess.
Very, very true. Very true. I've learned that it took me a while to finally get the hang of it, but all my nine moms got me straightened out with that.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. In all your learnings, what is so special about stones and their properties? Are these stones special stones for special things? Those kind of things that you encounter?
Yes, and it's amazing because each one of them, you know, whether I pick up a basalt stone because it came from the volcano, it knows how to be reheated, so it's really easy to use it for a hot stone. Or if I pick up some marble, which came from the bottom of the ocean, which is made up of all of the little crustaceans that live there, and I take that marble, which is used to being cold, and make it cold, then it's a natural instinct for that stone to gravitate towards its temperature because it knows how to be cold. It knows how to be hot. So it makes it easier for us to work with it. So we just have to listen and find out what it is that stone wants to do. You know, if I pick up a crystal, and it's so wonderful. I love living in modern times where we've got the proof of all this stuff. You know, that crystal in your watch and the crystal in your computer is enhancing the energy. So if I pick up a crystal and I put that on a person, I can enhance the energy that would be positive for them, something that would give them more wellness, make them stronger, and give their heart more energy. So each one of the stones has a way that it can work with the human body. And as you mentioned earlier, how we are stone. We are made up of minerals.
Mm-hmm.
And if we take the water, which is related to stone, and add the water in the human body, and use the water to heat and chill the stones, then we're bringing that entire relationship of the human body into something that we can apply to it to bring wellness. So it all blends together. And every stone has its own resonance, and now modern science is able to measure the harmonics of them. so they know mm-hmm. that certain ones have 7.5 megahertz or 3.2 megahertz
right.
or whatever they are. So now there's actually scientific proof behind what we called energies or properties of the stones.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool.
Very, very interesting, because these are the things that I guess from a layman perspective, we just take it for granted. We don't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not in the shape of a human form,
mm-hmm.
Especially or breathing in this case, then it's nothing.
Right, right.
And you just took it to the next level.
You know,
for
sometimes
it.
I get such a kick out of how complicated we try to make things. And if we would go back to our like fourth or fifth grade science class
mm-hmm.
and remember how the teacher told us, well, if it has birth and if it has life and if it has death, then it
mm-hmm.
was alive. And we think that only applies to something that has legs and can move around or fly around or swim around.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't stop and think about that. But with a stone, if it was blown out of the volcano, it was given birth. And if it managed to live as a cliff and then it got eroded with the ocean and it got pounded and beat on and eventually turned to sand,
mm-hmm.
it's no longer a stone, so it had death. So
mm-hmm.
everything between birth and death must have been life.
Mm-hmm.
So that stone was living while it was that cliff.
Mm-hmm.
So if we stop and realize that, you know, in our language we have a word, Metaquiaosin. Metaquiaosin translates into English as all my relations. Not a very good translation. What we're saying there is that the energy within me, whatever that spark of life is that Creator decided this was going to make life and brought it into life like that, did the same thing in a tree. He did the same thing in a stone. He does the same thing in a blade of grass or an ant. And when that spark is gone and it dies and lays down, then it's recycled back into Mother Earth to give life to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that is how we see that we are related to everything, that it's more than, like you were saying, we are all one, and, you know, that's all. We got a lot of New Age mamby-pamby stuff going around, but if we really think about it, if Creator decides this is life and this is death and this is the day this thing lives and this is the day this thing dies, then we really are all related.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we all pretty much have almost the same elements in our, I guess, structure, being, or whatever you want to call it. And what I mean is we all, that includes the stones or plants or whatever, I often give someone an example. For example, you know, from an authorship standpoint of view, the difference between, say, Stephen King and, say, myself or a regular person out there, we all learn the ABCs.
Mm-hmm.
But he's able to orchestrate it to whereby he's making millions of dollars out of it.
Right, there is something about that.
Right, and so when it's all said and done, we all have the same atoms and protons and electrons and the carbon atom, the hydrogen combination,
mm-hmm.
but it's all reconfigured differently. We have a different matrix, say, versus
right.
a cat or a dog, and then from the living thing to the non-living thing, per se, in our concept of living thing, versus the stones or the wood. And
right.
But with all said and done, we have the same elements,
mm-hmm.
for lack of
mm-hmm.
a better term here. So we are a lot more closely connected than we think we are.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool, because I'm sure that whatever it is, once we are on the next level and speaking with Creator face-to-face, we are going to be so amazed at how simple this is. And we have tried to overcomplicate it, because it really is all one thing.
Well, maybe sometimes in terms of overcomplicating it, we simplify it, because if it's not like us, then it doesn't exist. Or it doesn't really matter. And so it's funny, because it's the flip side of the equation, because we're looking at it. It's something that we can relate and can communicate back with us, then it doesn't deserve our attention, and that's sad in all
right.
actuality.
Right.
Let's talk about geothermal therapy. What is that?
Okay. Well, geo means stone, and thermal means temperature, and therapy, of course, is the work that we do on the body. So any kind of stone work on the body involving temperature is geothermal therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the modern term that's been used to kind of sandwich in all the many different expressions that are out there. It was actually a term that was coined in a class for Mary Nelson, the owner of LaStone. Lassonde therapy is a very well-known, very well-respected form of geothermal therapy. And it's like instead of saying acupuncture, which you automatically know is going to involve needles in the meridians on the body, I can say geothermal therapy, and you're automatically going to know it involves stones with temperature.
I see.
So that's the professional term for what we do.
And what's the difference between geothermal therapy versus acupuncture and cupping?
Well, it's kind of neat because there's a really good relationship between those. Cupping is used to increase circulation by pulling the blood up to the surface. So it pulls it away from the muscle and brings it up to the surface of the skin. And that's part of what we're doing when we bring in the cold stone with the vasoconstriction pushes the blood away. And as soon as I pull the cold stone off, you watch the blood come to the surface. It's just pink comes to the surface of the skin. So in that way, the cold stone and the cupping are related. With the acupuncture, we're doing a lot of the same points when we work with warm stones or chilled stones on different points on the body. We're just not using a needle. We're using the stone to touch the same point.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, we're doing a lot of the same effect for the physiology of the body. We're just using a different tool.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of nice how they complement each other. And a lot of people who are doing both cupping and acupuncture are now laying warm stones along the edge of the body because they found out if they wrap them in the warmth that the people relax and are more comfortable. And by relaxing them first before they begin their process, they're able to do a better job with their techniques. So that's
very interesting.
Cool. Yeah. I love to go. There's a lady named Jean Ann who works in Spokane as an acupuncturist. And when I go there, she lays all the warm stones along me. I completely forget where I'm at. And then later she'll tell me, yeah, we used about 50 needles today. And I didn't even know
I
had
one. Oh, my God.
Because I was busy with the stones, you know. It's really amazing.
That's amazing. I mean,
yeah.
It does the same thing. It just basically cleanses the body and gets the energy moving again.
Exactly.
And that's the beauty of this. Well, how does this traditional healing practice made its way past the generations to today's wellness practitioners?
This is so funny. You're going to love this because I was dragging my feet and having a fit about I did not want to go off of the reservation and teach non-Indians anything because I grew up in a time when this stuff was still illegal. You know, in 1977, Jimmy Carter signed the Freedom of Religion Act. And 1977 for me is yesterday. You know, my last baby was born in 75, so this isn't very long ago for me. So I was afraid that maybe something would happen and they'd change the laws again and then everybody would know I was doing stones and then I'd be in trouble with the law. Anyway, I was throwing a big fit that I didn't want anything to do with it. Well, lo and behold, this little white girl down in Arizona, Mary Nelson, started doing stones in a public way where it was getting into the massage industry. And she's telling everyone that it's something that came from the Indians. So my dad and the tribal council from our traditions through the Santé Dakota Sioux Nation said, you need to go tell this woman to stop that. So they put me on a plane. Now, I've been on about 3 planes in my life before that. They put me on a plane. I go to Arizona to tell this little white woman to stop telling us about this. So stop telling the world about the stones and stop saying they came from the Indians. And well, I get there, and the first thing she does is tells me that she had a vision. So I get on the phone, and I call my dad, and I said, she had a vision. So what? You know, I don't get to decide who gets a vision. So then he says, well, they're selling stones. That can't be good. Oh, okay. So I go back and tell her, what's this thing of selling the stones? So she takes me into their warehouse where they have all of the stones. Now, I'm expecting to get there, and I know they're cutting those marble stones and making shapes. Well, I'm thinking we're going to hear screeching saws and stones are going to be crying and, you know, that whole big expectation. Well, I walk through the door, and the first thing I smell is like rain on dirt, that fresh smell. Turns out they're putting the marble under water because they have to have a diamond bit blade under water to keep from shattering the stone.
Right.
It's not screeching and screaming. It's going, well, you know, I'm thinking, kind of, okay, well, we'll get along with that. Now let's look at the basalt. This is, they're probably shaking it through a big grid like they do at the gravel place, you know, and they're making sizes. Well, I walk into the next room. The first thing I smell is sage. Someone has an altar going, and they've smudged the area with sage. And these women are sitting at a table, and they are handling the stones, feeling for the partners and the mates by size and shape. And it's like, well, that's how we used to do it in the old days. And all of a sudden, it just came, I don't get visions, and I don't get to see things. I'm not one of those kind of people. I'm kind of disappointed that I didn't get that gift. But I had an impression and a feeling and a sensation, and I knew we've been making arrowheads, and we've been making spear points, and we've been carving jewelry, and I even wear turquoise.
Mm-hmm.
We've been shaping the stones forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't get my turquoise ring for free. I have to go buy it.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently it's okay to sell stones. So I call up my dad, and I tell all of the people in the tribal council that are in charge of this. I said, well, now what? They said, well, now you need to teach her the traditions behind it. So Mary hired me to come on with La Stone Therapy as a specialty instructor and teach her teachers about the traditions behind it and where, how the native life lives with the Stone Nation.
Mm-hmm.
And it opened the door, and now I've been all over the world, literally all over the world, teaching in a workshop format how to do stone medicine.
That's fantastic. It's a wonderful story, and it's meant to be because the timing is right, and of course you met someone who has a tremendous amount of respect for the tradition. She may lack the lineage knowledge of the therapy, the process, and everything else, and the history, and that's where you come in.
Right.
But obviously, both of you were led to each other.
Oh, absolutely. You know, she has been such a gift to me because before this, I've always known there was some kind of science behind things, but didn't really pay much attention to it. And we've been working together for, about 10 years now. And it's caused me to get busy and really find the science behind everything to prove it and to speak in more professional terms. And, you know, I learned my anatomy by skinning out a deer. You know, I knew how this bone was connected to that.
Right, bone.
Right. That's how we learned anatomy. Well, now I don't call it a wing bone. Now I say it's a scapula. You know, so the gift of teaching each other from these two different perspectives has just been a big blessing for both of us. You know, there's been times where we've ended up with our back against the wall saying, this can't be right. I can't accept this, because we look at something thinking we're in opposing positions. But when we really keep working at it, because we both have so much commitment and so much love for the stones, that if we keep talking and keep working it, pretty soon we find out we are walking in harmony. We're just taking two paths that are beside each other.
Right.
It's incredible. We've really learned a lot from each other.
Fantastic. How should someone look for the right stone therapist? Is there any special things that we need to make sure that we're getting the right therapist?
Absolutely. Like many things, you know, we spoke about the sweat lodge earlier and how sometimes it gets misused. And, you know, there's actually even been some recently in the news, some death happened in a sweat lodge that was run inappropriately. Well, unfortunately, things can happen with the stones if they are handled inappropriately.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing a lot of people being burned with second and third degree burns. Lawsuits are happening in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
There's a terrible flesh-eating bacteria like MRSA that can be passed from one client to the next if the stones are not sanitized properly. So it's really important to find a practitioner who has the right kind of education and background to know all the safetyness, all of the different types of safety for sanitation, for temperature control, and understands what they're doing when they work on the body. If someone has diabetes, you would not want to be using the temperatures on hot stones on their feet. They couldn't feel the temperature, and it could create a problem in the vascular system. So you need to find a therapist who is certified by the Geothermal Therapy Association. And the Geothermal Therapy Association is, they have a website online at www.geothermaltherapy.com.
Mm-hmm.
And they can tell you if your practitioner is certified, and you can ask your therapist or massage practitioner if they've been certified. And then you can find out where they've gotten their education. They should have some kind of continuing education accreditation, because it doesn't get taught well in the massage schools.
Mm-hmm.
So if they show you a certificate from Lestone Therapy or from Stone Medicine, then you automatically know that they've received that kind of in-depth education and know what they're doing. Now, if they just bought a DVD and a box of rocks, you could be
right.
Could really, really find out. It would be the same thing as going to an acupuncturist who bought a box of needles and a DVD. You know, I'd be really nervous about having them put a needle in me because they wouldn't really have the education in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And so geothermal therapy is a serious enough medical practice that people really do want to examine the credentials of their therapist before they just submit to it. And that's getting tricky because, you know, you just have to look at the wall and read their certificates or question them before you make the appointment and do a little research and find out how they got their education. But there
Very
are
interesting.
Thousands and thousands that are well educated out there right now.
Right.
I know there's over 25,000 Lestone therapy practitioners here in the United States, and I trust their education because I know that one. Now, there are other companies. I'm not very good at company names unless I just happen to know them, but there are other companies who are doing very well. I know Bruce Baltz is a very talented practitioner, and he has a lot of people that he trains. I don't know the name of his company for sure, but a lot of times a person can get in touch with the National Certification Board for Therapeutic Massage and Body Workers, NCTMB, and they can tell you what certification your practitioner has. So it is important to find someone with the correct education.
Wonderful information that we need to have. In your travels, teaching stone medicine and combining ancient wisdom with modern science, how has that impacted you in your life?
Well, some of it's pretty funny because, you know, remember, we didn't have thermometers. We just kind of like trusted our hands, and if it was hot, it was hot. If it was cold, it was cold. And we understood the various body parts, like I said, you know, from butchering animals. That's how we learned what these different organs looked like and what they were and where they were and all that. But now, coming into the more modern times, I'm able to use a laser thermometer to measure the temperature of the stone versus a meat thermometer that's in the water to tell me the temperature of the water, and can take these anatomy posters and show someone, okay, this is where this vein is, and this is where this nerve is, and, you know, all of these things that are tools that come with the modern science and the modern world have made it so much faster to teach people. So people don't have to do like I did with years and years and years of study and practice, and, you know, it doesn't take them 20 years to become a stone walker. They're able to do it in a weekend workshop where they have 3 or 4 days. And part of that's because the science is there and people learn differently now, and I can show them with physical tools how they're going to accomplish certain things on the body with the stones. So the science has increased the speed of people's learning and has given me the ability to have the tools to deliver it quicker, because I can't take everybody home to the teepee and spend 3 or 4 years. You know, so thank goodness modern times and modern science has changed my life.
Fantastic. How can someone get information about you and keep up with the latest happenings with Stone Medicine?
Well, they can go to my website, and this is so funny. You can just Google Stone Medicine and it shows up there. But the website is www.sacredstonemedicine.com. And there's a calendar there, and the calendar explains what workshop is being held at what location. And there are several people teaching my work now, too. So a lot of teachers are in different locations at different times, and it tells them how to go about hosting a workshop or how they can find a practitioner in their area. So there's a lot of information there on the website.
Well, we're coming towards the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for a living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Well, there's several things I think that are so important, and a lot of it is learning to listen to our elders. And something that took me a long time to hear from one of my elders was, live in this breath. They were always telling us that, live in this breath.
Mm-hmm.
And the little legend and story that goes along with it is, you can't find the breath from last week when you've hurt your foot. Where is that breath? look behind you, look under the table, look behind the chair. Where is that breath? You can't find that breath. That breath is complete. Let it be. So there's no need to carry the past forward. You don't need to carry guilt or shame or any of the things that we think we need to carry forward. Just leave it, because that breath is done. And think about that next breath. You know, now how am I going to find that breath next week when my phone bill's due? I can't find it. It's not under the tree. Where is that breath next week? Well, I don't have to worry about next week's breath. So there's no need to carry worry and stress and fear. If I live in this breath, now, right here in this breath, I am on the phone with a wonderful person that I've just met, having a great conversation that maybe others are experiencing. In this breath, my life is perfect. It's in balance, speaking on the things that mean so much to me in my heart. So if I live in this breath, that keeps me in the present. That keeps me in the now. Now, I probably won't make a fortune off of it like Eckhart Tolle or some of those folks, but this is an ancient tradition that our family has lived by forever, and it's just about living in this breath.
That's fantastic. Yes, yes, that's fantastic. And it's basically living in the now, because we all tend to have this thing about reminiscing yesterday and then thinking about what we're going to be doing tomorrow, and we forget that we're here now and appreciating things now.
Exactly. And I think the word now is large enough that it could incorporate the entire day or the entire week or the entire event, because the word now is a little bit broad. But if I bring it back to this breath, boy, that's going to keep me focused in this second, in this moment. You know, I'm sitting on my front porch as we've had this conversation, watching the hummingbirds and listening to the squirrels and stuff. And it's like, in this breath, things couldn't be any more perfect.
That's fantastic. Well, what is coming up for you for the remainder of this year?
Well, let's see. I'm actually home for a little while, so I've had a chance to paint the kitchen and, you know, vacuum the floor and do some of that kind of stuff. See my poor husband, who thinks I am a visitor that passes through occasionally. And the next trip is to London, and from London to Germany, and then to Tucson, or then to Virginia for a retreat event. Oh, that one's going to be so fun. There's a massage school who is hosting myself and another medicine woman, Janelle Lackman, and they're setting up a teepee at this beautiful retreat center and inviting people to come and learn the stones. And so we'll be teaching some continuing education classes and making some craft items and having ceremonies. And it's just going to be a lot of fun. And then Tucson, and finally I will take off at Thanksgiving.
So. Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. So you have an opportunity to take a little break and spend some time with your family for a change.
Yeah, have to be with the family once in a while. I send my grandkids postcards from all over the world, but once in a while I got to get with them to have a hug.
Oh, I'm sure they. I'm sure they're very excited to receive greetings from you from all over the world.
Yeah, they all have their little collection. They all think it's really fun. So, and sometimes that's the biggest challenge of my trip, is to find a place to buy postcards at a post office. But it's worth it. It's great.
Wonderful. Now, let me ask you this. Apparently, you are living the life that's chosen you. Coming to full circle, you know how resistant you were in the very beginning. And now that you're living the life that's chosen you, and you're feeling this wonderful energy, and from speaking to you on the air this morning, it's just a wonderful energy that I can feel and sense you radiate. How can someone basically create that within themselves?
You know, I think so many opportunities are out there that sometimes it's like we've shown up at this giant smorgasbord, and there's such a huge potluck in front of us that we don't know whether we want to take three pieces of cake and one piece of pie, or a piece of roast, or a hunk of chicken. So everybody's so busy trying to look at everything all at once, sometimes they lose their appetite before they even get their plate. We have to stop and slow down and sit on the ground sometimes and just feel what it is we really want. And when a person actually can acknowledge and accept what it is they want, then it's easy, because life will open up. I didn't want to teach stone medicine to non-Indian people.
Mm-hmm.
But one day, I brought home a picture in the third grade of Stonehenge, and I wanted to see those stones.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't know that you had to get on an airplane and fly to England to go see Stonehenge. You know, I was in the fifth grade. But I did want to see those stones. So my desire for seeing the stones allowed me to finally get on this path that would make that happen. And for my 50th birthday, I went with a group of women who had completed a workshop with me, and we sat at Stonehenge. So once I finally knew exactly what I really wanted, the way to get there, the avenue, the journey, the mm-hmm. process, that's all divine guidance. Creator will make that happen for us, but we have to know what we really want. We have to know what the results are.
You basically have to chart everything out, and once you realize that, don't sweat the small stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. And, you know, they talk about storyboards and writing down
right.
your goals and taking pictures. Those
right.
things work because they're real. That
right.
really works because it helps you define what you really want.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually the emotional impact, the feeling. It's not the thing. And once we get that figured out in our head, the thing will show up that will satisfy that emotional response that we're looking for.
That's yeah. fantastic. Well, Jenny, thank you so much for that word of wisdom and also for sharing the recipe for living earlier. I thought it was a wonderful recipe for living, wonderful story, and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Barbara Hofmeister. She's an internationally renowned speaker, best-selling author, and an expert on the topics of human growth. Barbara and I will be discussing her new book, To Be or Not to Be, The Choice is Yours. She will be helping you rediscover your hidden dreams, reinvent yourself to succeed, and live your life's true purpose. For additional information about this show, future shows, and for my recipes for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Twitter/FMMKTalkRadio. And Jenny, please repeat your website again so that our listeners can get to you.
Sure. That's www.sacredstonemedicine.com. Thank you so much, Johnny. This has been awesome.
It's wonderful to have you on our show this morning. And to all our listeners, have a great week. And Jenny, thank you again and have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.